Chapter 14, A Lack of Success. Rashaan sat silently in his seat at the head of the inner circle. The guards in the Tower of Contemplation had been instructed to inform the rest of the inner circle that Warlock Rashaan would explain matters just once when all had arrived. Eight of his colleagues sat in matching silence, awaiting the stragglers in awkward fellowship. Warlock Rashaan did not drum his fingers or stir in his seat. He did not look about or even blink. He thought, and he had much to think about. It would be useful having Brannis around. His plans for the war seem sound. His airships have great promise. I did not even ask his twin's name, but then I cannot slip and call him by it if I do not know it. But if his twin has the sort of mind he does, I will take the one with a source such as I have never seen. So much potential. So much danger. If he can accidentally breach the ether and cross between worlds, what other havoc could he cause? I need to teach him some proper spells and train him as a sorcerer before all Kadrin finds out. The 11th member of the inner circle to arrive stirred Rashaan from his reveries.
"We are all here but Iridan. Where is your son?" Dolvain asked.
He had taken on the role of speaker for the rest of the circle in dealing with the warlock. "He will not be joining this session. He escorted his foster parents home, and I gave him leave to spend a day or so with them. I feel it best if he had time to gather himself," Rashaan informed them.
"Very well, then. Start by explaining what happened in the palace last night."
Dolvain rarely stood on formalities. Despite the fact Rashaan was fairly certain the man hated him, Rashaan found himself liking the peasant-born sorcerer.
"Since you are intent on bluntness, I will match it. It was Brannis. He finally unlocked his source," Rashaan said.
"What?"
Aloysius Soloran gasped, merely the first to put voice to her surprise.
"I know not the details of how he managed it, but the quake that shook the city last night originated in his bedchambers. He opened some sort of rift into the ether. His room and the ones adjoining are missing some wall and ceiling. The desk he was working at is gone, as well as his sword and armor, which he was wearing at the time. As best I can tell, he was sucked in as well, but managed to escape," Rashaan explained, having given the lie a bit of thought before the inner circle convened.
"That is ghastly," Caladrius exclaimed. "Is the boy all right?"
"He is the worse for wear, but seems not to be permanently damaged. I think time may have passed strangely within the void. He seemed wasted as if famished by long illness, but he could not have been gone more than a few moments as time passed here. He has little recollection of the rift itself," Rashaan said.
"Is this rift a danger still?" Dolvain asked, ever practical.
"So long as I can convince Brannis not to try whatever trick he used to create it in the first place, I believe we are safe. I found no trace of the rift as I left him."
"Humph. No curiosity anymore, eh? Concerned for your own hide?"
Fenris needled Dolvain, a friend he had always considered overly cautious.
"Did it work?" Fenris grinned.
The old sorcerer had asked after Brannis for years while he was at the academy, wishing to see a truly powerful sorcerer in the Empire before he died.
"One might safely venture that opinion," Rashaan said. "I have yet to witness him work any magic, but his source is impressive, putting it mildly. Once he has rested up a bit, I intend to see what he can do with it. It is what the lad has wanted all his life. It would be a shame not to put him to the test."
Rashaan grinned.
"Got something in mind for him then?" Caladrius asked. "You look to be ruminating on something wicked. Tell us."
"Oh, I think I will save a surprise for later, presuming all goes well with Marshal Brannis's recovery. But I think time has come to attend to the real business we had planned for this morning. Shall we?"
A stack of parchment sheets flew from Rashaan's desk and whisked themselves across the sanctum, one to each in attendance. Rashaan gave them a moment to peruse the contents. He watched faces to see reactions and was not disappointed.
"Admirable that you have it down to three, but is this truly the best of the lot?" Caladrius asked, holding up the list he had just read. "Agreed. I had hoped for something people could gladly support. After that coronation of a wedding 2 days past, I half expected Iridan's name to top the list. But these are scant better," Dolvain scoffed, waving a hand at his copy dismissively. "It might in fact be true that there is a closer heir within the Empire," Roshan allowed. "Some poor, scared lad out there may wish to have nothing to do with succession and the plots and intrigues of court life. His folk may have sheltered him and humored him, and we will hear naught of him ever. It could also happen that some poor, slovenly seneschal has misplaced enough of his lord's documents that a rightful claim was unable to be verified. But, good sirs, I would like to remind you that there was a conspiracy amongst this very assemblage here." Roshan swept his arms wide to indicate those present. "Who actively sought out and culled the imperial line. I worked with what was left over, and these three are the best of them." "This first one here, it seems out of place," Fenris commented, and several heads bent back to review their copies. "He is illegitimate. It even says so on your list. Explain that." "The other two are legitimate, but their claims both branch back to Escalon the Fourth. Somic Highwater was a bastard of Liad's line, and two emperors less removed from Daris. We lose Liad's blood, and Tamarin's, if we skip back past them to a branch from Escalon," Roshan pointed out. "Well, that is all fine on its own, but an illegitimate heir carries all manner of problems," Dolvain said. "The people will not like the scurrilous break in lineage. In addition, you always have questions about the legitimacy of even an illegitimate claim. Once you break with officially kept records of noble births, who is to say what might have been forged? So Mackaywater swore to the veracity of the documents. I would accept the word of one descendant of Liad's blood," Roshan countered. "Bah, you beg the question. You cannot run us around by the ear like ink-fingered schoolboys with your tricks of logic. If Somic Highwater is not royally descended, what would his word be worth?" Dolvain snapped back, irritated that Roshan would try such a meat-fisted wordplay to convince them. "I see it in his face, in his build. 5 generations have not bred Liad's manor out of the line. I see little enough of Escalon when I look at Marnus Tolfury, and none when I look at Brennan Hawkfield. I wish to re-establish the imperial line, not just continue it. We need the best and strongest of royal blood, not the cleanest," Roshan argued. There were few times when the cynical warlock showed genuine fervor for anything but bloodletting, but his service to the Emperor's line was one of the exceptions. "So you think that Somic Highwater would be a better emperor than the other two, then?" Fenris asked. "Seems a good enough thought, if all other factors weigh the same." "No, mistake me not. All three are vapid, spoiled slackwits. We might have made a proper emperor out of any of them if they were younger, but none were brought up to handle the burdens and responsibilities. No, whomever we anoint will almost certainly be a disastrous emperor, and it will be our penance for allowing it to get to this point, just having to deal with him. You all allowed this to happen, knowingly or not, and I left the empire to its own ends for far too long. It will take at least a generation to stabilize the dynasty, but we must begin soon, and from the best stock available," Roshan said. "It is an interesting thought, this talk of dynasties. When this search began, I had higher hopes for an heir," Sonin Tenrevin commented. He was quiet among the inner circle and spoke seldom. When he did, it drew attention. "What if we were to install a new dynasty?" "It would cause open rebellion," Caladrius exclaimed. "Even the lengthy search had a few noblemen gnashing their teeth and loosening swords in their sheaths. Appearances aside, we all know there are divided opinions among the circle and even amongst ourselves. Who is to say we would not get dragged into a civil war, even with Magrin practically standing before the city gates?" "I agree, it is a poor idea, though I doubt it would be as bad as you describe, Rishon answered. The Empire's vast enough that many do not yet see the Magrin as threats. They expect the problem to be dealt with, at the expense of marching a few troops off to join the cause.
Civil war would bring death to their own homes,
and few would act without a preponderance of support from the inner circle.
And if some enterprising nobleman sided with Magrin?
A favorable peace with the promise of a new,
more accommodating dynasty, Dolvain pondered. I would support the bastard claim before ever agreeing to a new dynasty. The why might be justifiable, but the who would lead us to ruin.
Aye,
whom would we choose, if it came to it? Caladrius wondered aloud.
No, do not even put a name to that thought, Dolvain warned, leaping to his feet. If word leaves this chamber of a favorite, we could well start a war as surely as if we had named an emperor to start that new dynasty. It would be the same sides, but a different man in power until it was ended. Please, settle down. No more talk of dynasty change. We ought to decide from among the three candidates, Rishon said as he attempted to rein in the meeting. Once we have a name, I can have the court popinjays arrange a coronation ceremony. It will be good for the Empire, for the peasants and nobles alike, to see the matter of succession resolved.
And you would step down as regent? Dolvain asked, arching an eyebrow skeptically.
Assuming that is the wish of the new emperor, of course, Rishon replied with a shrug. You think I enjoy the nonsense I must deal with running the Empire myself? Not a one of you would trade places with me, and you know it. I have a war to fight, and a child running it. Brilliant though Brannis may be, I will need to take a more personal interest once the real slaughter begins.
When the inner circle took a vote on the matter of the best claim, it split three ways almost equally. With four votes each for Somic Highwater and Brennan Hawkfield, Warlock Rashan's vote carried the victory for Liad's bastard thrice great grandson. Juliana sleepwalked through her morning routine. She had taken her morning feast when the servants bringing it awakened her. She dressed in everyday garb, a half-robe over a tunic and breeches, with comfortable boots fit for riding or long walks, and the harness for her dagger sheaths. It was a departure from the finery she was being prodded to wear now that she was respectably married, but she supposed that she was just not feeling that respectable. Warlock Rishon had requested a meeting with her once he had finished his circle business for the morning. She was not sure what he wanted, but she had plenty of theories.
He looked at me strangely after seeing what I had done to Iridan. I have been stared at by men aplenty, and his was a stare I cannot place. It was not lechery, plainly. It was not anger, which my new oath father rarely deigns to hide. He seemed neither amused nor approving. Perhaps it was an appraising stare. Were a ship to be viewed by a prospective captain, would it have seen such a look?
With Iridan gone to his foster parents' home, and no official business to attend to, Juliana decided to take stock of the wedding gifts they had received. There was a set of matching crystal goblets, chased in gold. Someone had given them a runed candelabra, the sorcerer's equivalent to handmade pottery. There was a pair of matching saddles with a note saying they were from Iridan's cousin Aloysia. There was a trio of wooden boxes. The largest one, long and narrow, bore Iridan's name. The two smaller boxes, one stacked atop the other, bore the name Juliana Soloran. It was an odd thing to read. Seeing her own new name there looked out of place.
I always knew that would be my name one day, but not this way.
She opened the first and was surprised to see a dagger within, black as slate. The blade was not cold to the touch as steel would have been.
Dragon bone! This is one of Jadefire's teeth.
Juliana picked up the blade and tested it in the air. It had more heft to it than was apparent by looking at it, but did not seem to slow her handling of it. Suspicious, she looked into the ether and was unsurprised to see it aglow. Many of the gifts the couple had received shone in the ether as well. It was a consequence of inviting the entire imperial circle to the wedding. Continuing in ether vision, she saw that the other of her boxes held another dagger, and Iridan's contained a sword. They stood out from the trinkets and keepsakes that formed the bulk of their gifts, for having much stronger concentrations of ether. These were not runed weapons, but true rune-forged blades. She noticed in the bottom of the box that there was a slip of parchment. It bore a single word, freedom. Replacing the dagger in its box, she opened the other and found a similar weapon. It was not identical, feeling lighter in her hand, having a slight curve at the tip, but it was no less wondrous or formidable. There was a note in the second box as well. It read, adventure. But she could see more ink showing through from the backside. She turned it over and read, one day, long ago, I promised you a bridal gift. You thought I would promise you jewels or a horse, or some tangible thing. Instead, I promised I would give you a life of freedom and adventure. Despite my failing, I had hoped to make some small amends. I hope they may offer you the protection I no longer can. Also, think of names for them that you might share with others. Keep their true names for yourself, and do not keep these notes. The note was unsigned, but she never doubted its origin. She knew what she would name them before she set the notes aflame and scattered their ashes in the fireplace. She had to poke holes in the ends of her sheaths to fit them, but the two new daggers nestled at her back, tucked beneath her tunic. The weight and size would take getting used to, and she would certainly have to get new sheaths made for their size before she carelessly injured herself on the exposed tips. Juliana had no illusions about how much good they would do her if Roshan was truly angry with her, but their presence was reassuring nonetheless. As she walked through the palace's halls, no one greeted her. The ones that visibly took note of her made efforts not to be acknowledged. Side corridors suddenly became preferred routes. Conversations became much more engrossing, and servants about their tasks grew quite admirably focused on them.
So, none of them are certain where I fall in the warlock's graces either. Rumors must be throughout half the empire by now about my little spat with Iridan. I wonder if they are afraid of me personally, or of incurring Rashan's anger if they associate with me.
The room she was to meet the warlock in was a storage cellar on the lower level, which was never a good sign in Juliana's, or Soria's, experience. Whatever he wanted with her, he wanted it kept private. Roshan preferred most of his work to be veiled from public view, she knew, but rumors of what befell in those clandestine meetings ranged from the bizarre to the ominous. Some believed he had enthralled the minds of half the folk in the palace and several of the nobles. A few maintained that he was plotting to eliminate the rest of the inner circle and take complete control of the empire. Juliana suspected that he was a suspicious old curmudgeon, with more plots afoot than she would ever begin to unravel. The door was slightly ajar when she reached the appointed room. Like everything on the servants' level, it was plain and unadorned, though the surrounding walls and floor were still of the same black marble as the rest of the palace architecture. As she pushed it in, she saw that the room was largely empty, save for a few barrels and empty crates piled against one wall. Atop one of the barrels sat Roshan Solaran, his feet dangling well off the floor from his humble perch. I am a busy man, so I would hope to keep this brief. Roshan waved a hand, and the door closed behind her. Juliana whipped around and slipped into ether vision, seeing that the door was shielded as well. It was not a strong shield. She might be able to break it if she had to run. Privacy. Do not worry. I have no intention of harming you, Oath Daughter. You may have come within a hair's breadth of killing your new husband, but that hair's breadth was crucially important. I saw something that I could not see in the regimented confines of the practice yard. He thought himself safe out there, but not when he angered you. Roshan said mildly, slipping off the barrel to his feet.
He hit me first, Juliana hedged warily.
Indeed, I cannot imagine he was given any reason to do so, Roshan joked, giving a half smile. You have as sharp a tongue as anyone has dared use in my presence. I doubt you kept it in check with just Iridan present. Care to share what you said to provoke him?
Not especially, no, Juliana replied. There was something odd about Roshan's manner, something in his stance.
In one swift motion, the warlock drew Heaven's Cry and leveled it in Juliana's direction. Before the blade left its sheath, Juliana had already silently raised a shielding spell, drawn both her blades, and leapt back a pace.
Roshan laughed, lowering his blade before returning it to its sheath.
That is precisely the reflex that Iridan lacks. He seems to be making fine progress in the practice yard. His source and draw are fearsome, and he learns new spells quickly. What he cannot do is react surely under pressure, when action needs to precede thought. He ether burns himself trying half measures, just as he did yestermorn. I have half a mind to train you as a warlock in his place. You have nowhere near the raw strength of ether, but you are a warrior at heart. I hope to find out soon whether Brannis is or not.
Brannis? What do you mean by that? He is a warrior. You saw him at Rainsdark and in Kelvi Forest, Juliana responded, confused as to what Roshan meant. She was breathing heavily, still poised, ready to defend herself.
Actually, I met him after his major encounter with the goblins in Kelvi, but that is not the point. Prowess with a blade in the heat of battle is not the same as keeping the calmness of mind to use magic, Roshan said.
What are you talking about? Brannis can't use magic and everyone knows it, Juliana said, exasperated. If you are still holding some hope of his suddenly developing a source stronger than a candle, you have a long wait ahead of you.
Oh my, Roshan mused. No one told you? Juliana made sure her puzzled expression made it clear that no one had.
That quake that shook half of Cadrus last night was Brannis, Roshan said.
Juliana's puzzled look grew a perplexed aspect.
The quake, Roshan said. The one last night?
Roshan seemed to be prodding for some sign of dawning recognition in his oath daughter's eyes, but was finding none.
I sleep soundly, she shrugged. What did I miss?
A quake shook the palace and half the city felt it. Everyone knows Brannis has been studying old books of magic. The new airships are a testament to that. But he seems to have figured out a way to unleash his source, Roshan said.
Unleash it? You could tie that sorry little thing to a chair leg with a bit of yarn, and it would be held fast, Juliana joked,
though she never would have voiced that opinion so flippantly had Brannis actually been present.
Oh, not anymore, Roshan said. I have shielded off his room and a few adjacent ones damaged in the incident, so none has been in to see him yet as he recovers from the ordeal. And yes, he is worse for wear, but will be fine. Once you see for yourself, you may understand what your grandfather predicted all those years ago.
Really?
Juliana remained unconvinced.
Brannis? The same Brannis who could not light a firefly's arse in 6 winters of trying at the academy? That Brannis?
That one, yes. I have little notion of how much he has retained from his years there and how much he has gleaned from his more recent studies, but I suspect he has just enough knowledge to be terribly dangerous right now. I have the room shielded to prevent him bringing down half the palace trying some other fool experiment, Roshan huffed.
You are afraid of him? Juliana wondered aloud, instantly regretting it. Winds, Juliana. Think before saying things like that.
No, not afraid. Roshan waved away the notion dismissively. I may be the only one not in danger around here, excepting Iliardra, if she's not yet departed. I am concerned that the commander of all Kadrin's armies may be more a danger to us than to Magrin at the moment.
Roshan paced back and forth as he spoke, clearly bothered by the prospect.
If he really is that strong, would that not be a good thing? I mean, it is Brannis, after all. He will catch on quick enough, Juliana said, trying to sound hopeful. The prospect of Brannis being a sorcerer was complicated. Now, she thought, he picks now to finally become a sorcerer. 8 forsaken winters after he gets himself kicked out of the academy and ruins our betrothal. He has some explaining to do.
Oh, of that there is no doubt. I intend to see what use he can be, and see to what sort of use we can put him. If he can keep the war running smoothly, though, I will satisfy myself with that, Rashan said.
Do they ever? Run smoothly, I mean. Wars.
Juliana stumbled over the question, her mind pulling itself in 6 directions at once. She was worried about Brannis. She was mad at Brannis. She was still wondering what Rashan had planned for her. She worried that she slept too soundly for her own good. She was trying to carry on an intelligent conversation. She was wondering when Iridan would be getting back, and how she was going to face him after their confrontation.
None has yet, but I still think this one has a chance.
Rashan smiled, breaking the tension a bit. Now, if you will excuse me, there are a great many noblemen I have to go upset. The warlock unraveled the shielding spell that had sealed them in the room, and seemed about to leave when he paused.
Oh, and I know that Brannis had a hand in making those daggers. Did he happen to give them names?
Yes, Juliana answered. Their names are Duty and Honor. One answer, one comment, both true.
Noting that she still held the blades in hand, she self-consciously returned them to their hidden sheaths.
That boy thinks too much, Rashan commented as he departed, chuckling.
For half everybody beam,
Iridan slurred to his foster mother across the sturdy oak kitchen table of the house he grew up in. The swelling in his face had gone down, but it would take time to regrow new front teeth. Iridan had taken the wagon ride out to the countryside in the seat next to his father, but his mother had ridden in back, bundled up in blankets to keep warm in the early spring air. They had barely had a chance to talk.
Well, Dabby'll be married in the fall. You'll come out for that, war permittin', I suppose?
Ma Corian asked. Iridan nodded in reply. It was easier than talking.
Hadon's joining the army. Says that being your brother got him into the regular army instead of them conscripts. They'll train him up a proper soldier. Merrin is taking over more and more of the farming now that Pa's back gives him trouble. Drives the oxen and everything. Allie's expecting sometime this summer. She lives in Pevitt now with that man of hers. Writes more often than you do, though. She gave Iridan a playful glare.
Far we, Ma, Iridan apologized, frowning at his own inability to speak.
His father saw his dismay.
Ah, you still talk better than Hayden, and he's got all his teeth still. Leastwise, you can grow him back. Us regular folk have to just live without him, if and we lose him.
Pa Corian reassured Iridan.
Them wood swords ain't toys.
Iridan had not the heart to tell them it was Juliana who did it to him. He had blamed an incident in the training yard the morning after the wedding. They had left Cadrus before the rumors of what really happened began to seep in amidst the lies Rashan put out. The warlock had wanted to deflect signs of strife in the new marriage.
We'll have porridge set a stew tonight. No tough bits to gnaw through. Sure and be easier chewing, Ma promised.
Would I talk like them had I not gone off to the academy?
Iridan wondered. The practice of magic required precise diction, at least until a sorcerer reached the point of casting spells with no diction at all. All the students had proper enunciation beaten into their heads, sometimes literally.
If I had just kept quiet about my magical powers as a boy, could I have just lived out here, met some nice, shy local lass, and settled into raising barley and milking cows? It felt so right, sleeping in my own bed last night.
All right, Ma, Iridan managed. But I gotta go back after dinner, training tomorrow.
So soon?
That warlooker ain't much for recuperating, ya, is he?
Ma scolded Iridan in lieu of having Roshan present to chastise. They had only spoken to the warlock briefly prior to the ceremony.
Gonna be a warlock, Iridan said.
Yes,
Iridan thought to himself with a sigh. A warlock.
Why am I doing this?
Juliana asked herself as she headed for the warlock's chambers. She did not expect to actually find Roshan within, but that was not the cause of her confliction.
She has as much reason to be angry with me as Roshan does, but that does not mean she has overlooked it as well. Still, if anyone could get me past that thrice-cursed warlock's wards, it would be her.
Juliana arrived at the door out of breath. She had not been aware of the haste she had been making in her journey across the palace and up three flights of stairs. She took a moment to compose herself and calm her breath. She attempted to knock on the door, but it opened as her knuckles were about to rap against the wood.
Of course she knew I was out here.
Come in, child,
a lyrical voice beckoned from within.
And do not worry yourself.
I am not half the monster Roshan is, and he saw fit to leave you alive.
It was not the most reassuring greeting she had ever received, but she had certainly heard worse. Juliana stepped into the room with her oath mother. Iliardra sat languidly on the sill of one of the room's massive windows, a hefty tome open in front of her, floating unsupported save by ether.
I suppose you must want to know how it happened,
Juliana began, attempting to break the ice before asking favors.
Not really. The details may remain a mystery, though it is plain as to how it generally befell. He is Roshan's son much more so than mine. His timidity and meekness are a result of his upbringing. More that dreadful academy of yours than the hearty peasant folk we fostered him with. But the rage that lies beneath is his father in nascent form.
You are here to ask a favor of me. Do not deny it. I have seen this scene played out 1,000 times with different actors, and different favors to ask. Speak, and when you are done, I will have a favor to ask in return.
Iliardra spoke, not allowing Juliana a word of her own, despite a few half-hearted tries at interruption.
I want to see Brannis. I heard there was some sort of accident that opened his source or something like that. Roshan said he would recover, but I want to see him,
she told the ancient demon, who looked so like a young maiden.
Can you get me past Roshan's wards and back out again without him knowing?
Yes,
Iliardra answered softly, smiling as if to herself. Juliana looked around, confused.
What? That is it? What of the favor you wished in return?
It is no hurry, and I would have asked it whether or not you needed my help. I will tell you afterward.
Come here, child, and take my hand,
Iliardra said. Juliana regarded the wizened old creature in her nubile youthful form, with green hair and eyes a bit too large.
She is my oath mother now. If I want to see Brannis, I need her help.
Juliana reached out and took Iliardra's offered hand. It was cool to the touch, like wood or stone rather than flesh, but smooth as a baby's skin. Juliana found herself in another room. There was no sensation of movement. She felt nothing in the ether. She was just suddenly somewhere different, standing with her hand still outstretched to where Iliardra had been just the blink of an eye before. Juliana took quick stock of her surroundings. It was still the distinctive black marble of the palace all around her, and what looked to be a bedchamber. A massive hole was scooped out, exposing the adjacent room, and two immediately below those. It was an eerie sight, to be sure. Curled beneath the bedclothes was a Brannis-sized figure, which she presumed to be Brannis. The sort of demon who could transfer her through Rashan's wards was certainly clever enough to put her in the right room. More cautious than was her typical custom, Juliana took a quick look into the ether. She had wanted to confirm that she was indeed surrounded by Rashan's shielding wards, and to have a peek at Brennus's shiny new source, like sneaking a look at her age-day presence a week early. She gasped and cried out at the unexpected pain in her ether vision when she saw Brennus's source.
"Merciful Tansha! Have you begun granting Brennus's wishes as well? Or did Grandfather work his prophecy from beyond death?"
She was forced back into normal light vision
to avert the headache she felt coming.
Her grasp stirred at Brennus in his bed, but did not wake him.
"Well, he seems to be as sound a sleeper as ever, at least."
She walked quietly over to the bedside and sat down next to Brennus, seeming not to disturb him at all.
"He looks pale and gaunt,"
she thought as she brushed the hair back from his face.
"What happened to him?"
The question hung in her mind, but it did not hang long before her impatience shouldered it aside. She shook him gently by the shoulder.
"Brennus, Brennus, wake up."
Juliana spoke just above a whisper. Brennus stirred again, but did not wake.
"Brennus, I may not have much time. I wanted to see you and find out what happened to you."
Brennus's deep, even breaths caught up short in a snort as Juliana shook him a bit more vigorously. He opened his mouth as if to say something, then stopped himself and closed it again. His eyes blinked open, gazing into Juliana's when he was finally able to focus them anywhere.
"What day is it?"
Brennus whispered, speaking each word separately and slowly. He sounded weak and exhausted.
"Springtime 3rd, Juliana replied. "You cannot have been asleep too long since Rashan left you. How do you feel?"
"Tired. Confused. Such beautiful eyes,"
Brennus replied, smiling weakly.
"Well," Juliana replied ruefully, "you had your chance and botched it. If you had that source in you all along, you waited a season too long to reveal it. What did you do?"
"Not entirely sure. Think I had adventure."
Brennus sounded as if his wits were not quite sorted within that head of his. She thought she might have caught a hint of a Cardian in his accent, which might clue anyone who did not already know that he was twin-born. Juliana stroked his face gently with her hand, distracting him until he stopped even trying to talk.
"Well, Rashan said you were in a bit of rough shape after whatever it was that happened to you, but he expects you will be fine. I had to see for myself, though."
She leaned down and kissed him, lingering far longer than was probably proper for a recently married woman. Her hands ran along his body, finding scant muscle and more prominent ribs than she had been expecting. Kyrus said nothing, head swimming with dredged-up adolescent memories of times Brennus had spent together with Juliana. He knew that nothing he said was going to avail him. Atop that, anything he said might give him away as an impostor if he was not thinking clearly.
"I had hoped that you were not quite so innervated by your ordeal as you are. I wish we could have made better use of the little slice of privacy we have gained here. But truly, I am relieved that you were not harmed any worse," Juliana said, then lay down and nestled against Kyrus.
The two lay together in silence until Iliardra came to fetch Juliana, and they made their goodbyes with another kiss. Juliana seemed not to care if her oath mother saw.
"This is going to be a lot more trouble than Tipu and Kali,"
Kyrus thought, before allowing slumber to reclaim him and his exhausted mind.
"So you have had your indulgence," Iliardra spoke to Juliana as the two sat on the high balcony of Rashan's chamber, looking out over Cadrus. "I trust everything was to your satisfaction."
"Brennus seemed a bit strange. I don't know what happened to him. but he has yet to collect all the pieces of himself and put them back the way they belong. I had intended to press him for details, but he just seemed so exhausted. Brennus is usually so full of energy. I did not know what to say to him like that, Juliana replied.
So instead you just kissed him? Iliardra smiled with amusement. Before Juliana could begin defending her actions, Iliardra chuckled.
Worry not. Roshan has told me about your marriage customs. You and Iridan were arranged. You did your duty in marrying. It does not erase loves you already carried in your heart. It never will. Have a care how you conduct yourself. Much is expected of you, Oath Daughter.
Iliardra chuckled at the last word, as if finding the concept absurd.
You are just amused? You do not worry about Iridan?
Juliana wondered aloud, her inner censor as awake and alert as she had found Brennus.
I am an awful mother, Iliardra admitted. I gave up my babe before he was old enough to remember me, and hardly gave him another thought. Had Roshan not contacted me about the wedding, Iridan might have died of age before I thought to inquire about him. He is mortal and will remain so. I am immortal and hope to remain so. Our paths were never meant to twine tightly to each other. I have but one boon I would ask of you, to satisfy whatever motherly obligation I might have.
This is the favor you intended to ask of me? Juliana asked, leaning close, wondering what Iliardra could want of her.
Yes, I would ask that you do what you might to see that Iridan does not turn out like his father,
Iliardra implored, her doe-like eyes fixing on Juliana's.
I will do what I can, Juliana promised.
It was her fear as well, and she could already see the signs, the similarities. Iridan might not have the vicious nature that Roshan possessed, but it might yet lurk below the layers of meekness, of worry, of self-doubt, and of humility that lacquered his mind. A painted veneer that all who knew him saw, but which could be chipped away to reveal the base metal beneath, the true Iridan, whatever it might be.
Thank you. Oh, and one last thing before I go. Iridan is almost entirely his father's son, but there is some of me in him as well. In whatever children you bear him, be mindful that they may be more fey than even two such sorcerers might be expected to conceive.
And with that cryptic farewell, Iliardra was gone.